The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
Hear that? It's the call of the Crave. And when the Crave calls, you know what to do. Try the $5 Bacon Bundle. Because the only thing better than a White Castle slider is a White Castle slider topped with crispy hickory smoked bacon. So pick any two of either the Bacon Cheese Slider, 1921 Bacon Cheese Slider, or Chicken Bacon Ranch Slider. And also get a small fry for just $5 with the $5 Bacon Bundle. White Castle. Follow your Crave.
Summer long, the Roto-World football crew has discussed our personal positional rankings. A lot of agreements, some disagreements. Let's focus on those rankings disagreements today. Some might even call them outliers. I have Hayden Winks and Patrick Daugherty, but man, a wonderful stash, here with me today. Before, and since we are talking about rankings, let's first dive into the recent news of David Montgomery going out with a groin injury, a non-contact injury, which seems like it could have been much worse. Now reports state David Montgomery might miss up to 2 to 4 weeks from this moment, maybe even a little bit longer. Hayden, where have you dropped him to in your rankings?
I moved him down like 8 spots. I was kind of warming up to David Montgomery just because I thought that the Bears offense was going to be a little bit better than what people were realizing, but man, I don't want to be messing with a soft tissue groin injury. This isn't just like some light muscle strain. Like, we're talking about like a serious groin injury. I think he's going to miss a couple weeks of the regular season, but I'm not so much concerned about that. I think that the injury risk has to be a little higher that this happens again later on in the year. So I just moved him down. I'm probably not going to be drafting him anymore. And this just makes me more convinced that Allen Robinson and Anthony Miller are going to outperform where they're being drafted.
Reese's peanut butter cups are the greatest, but let me play devil's advocate here. Let's see. So, no, that's a good thing. that's definitely not a problem. Reese's, you did it. You stumped this charming devil.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
Life is a highway, and on it there will be many chicken sandwiches. But there's only one McCrispy. So go ahead and hit the turn signal if you know about this juicy gem of a detour.
Pat, I mean, David Montgomery for this entire summer has been in our running back 3 tier. I've been in on David Montgomery, especially if I start off with one of those first 3 selections, you know, your Christian McCaffrey's or your Zeke Elliott's or your Saquon Barkley's, because I knew in that Bears offense that he was going to get volume, and maybe his rookie year was going to be the worst year of his NFL career. But now, Pat, the question is, like, where do you move him down from? Because I had him at running back 17. Now I know I've moved Todd Gurley up, Chris Carson up, Melvin Gordon, David Johnson, Jonathan Taylor, but I'm still sticking with David Montgomery as my running back 22, which is ahead of the likes of Leonard Fournette, who is still healthy out there.
Yeah, Fournette's kind of the dividing line there, isn't he? And I mean, the big takeaway from this is now Ryan Nall is the new Antonio Gibson, just someone that we're so exuberant excited about. No, that is a joke. I think I'm kind of surprised the Bears haven't already signed a veteran. This does strike me as like, so David Montgomery, one of the reasons he was in this range to begin with in the rankings is because of there's nothing behind him. And the Bears are all in on David Montgomery. And it appears that's still the case. would be very surprised if they didn't sign a veteran, but it's been 48 hours and they still haven't done that. So David Montgomery, I don't think you can fade him out of the RB2 ranks just because of his importance to this offense. You know, offense with a very shaky quarterback situation, an offense that wants to be more run heavy than pass heavy, and an offense that just doesn't have an early down runner behind David Montgomery on the depth chart. And 2 to 4 weeks, I mean, Hayden's right. I mean, groin is the kind of thing that's just like screaming re-injury aggravation at some point, but 2 to 4, I think probably at worst, he's probably only going to miss one regular season game. He still has almost 17 days to get ready for week one. He could miss zero games. But at worst, I think he's only going to miss a game. I mean, the aggravation risk is very real, as Hayden outlined, but I'm still taking David Montgomery's opportunity over Leonard Fournette, to be frank.
Yep.
So I think at worst, I had him kind of in like the RB 18 to 20 range, and I think now he's just 22 to 24 range. It's an adjustment, but it's not a huge adjustment.
Yeah, just having a major difficulty, like just looking at my rankings, moving him beyond the Devin Singletaries, the Leonard Fournettes, even the Mark Ingrams. Hayden, you and I have been completely out on Tariq Cohen all summer long. I mean, looking at our rankings right now, you have him as running back 50. I have him as running back 51. It's interesting because there are other people in this fantasy community that have loved Tariq Cohen as a zero running back type player who can work in the passing game. Does this interest you any more in Tariq Cohen? Is it kind of just the talent and the situation that you're out on?
Well, everyone's chasing the receiving volume, and I can't blame him for that. That is how you spot breakout candidates. But he was just so inefficient last year. I'm just worried that his body just can't handle a big workload. So I'm going to move him up a little bit because I dropped David Montgomery down, but I'm still not going to be drafting him very much.
All right, let's move on to our differences in rankings. There are some significant ones here today. We're going to hit on running backs, quarterbacks, and wide receivers. Since we're in this running back groove, why don't we stay into it? And Pat, you and I have alluded to this for weeks now. Ever since the Damian Williams opt-out has happened, we are very split, the three of us, on Clyde Edwards-Helaire. Hayden has him as the running back 5. I have him as the running back 6. And you have him as the running back 12. Would you like to start, Pat?
First, I mean, don't you think that's still kind of charitable? Like a 5'7" running back who's never played a down of football, and I'm still ranking him as an RB1. So to me, it's not like I'm off the map with Clyde Edwards-Helaire. He's a special talent. We know that. But his truly special skill is pass catching. So we know from the very beginning he should be a special pass catcher, but he's going to catch a lot of passes. I've had questions since the draft, since before Damian Williams opted out, just if the Chiefs were going to need to force the issue on early downs with Clyde Edwards-Helaire. I'm not like a huge college film watcher or anything like that, but he never struck me. He struck me as a very, very good college runner. But when I saw Clyde Edwards-Helaire run, you know, I wasn't like thinking like, oh, this guy is going to be just an amazing between the tackles NFL runner. And I just think that's a transition that could take some time for him. And you know, the Chiefs, Andy Reid has never loved these big sprawling committees, but I mean, he just won the Super Bowl with one. And I just don't think in this COVID year of no offseason reps, spending the first half of training camp just conditioning, that he's going to force the issue with Clyde Edwards-Helaire right off the bat. And there's a lot of running backs on this Chiefs roster, and there's a lot of guys he can rotate in on early downs. And CH has a special skill in the pass catching. He's going to do that right from the jump. I just don't know. Being drafted as a clear cut, top 8 or 9 pick just seems very, very aspirational to me with a 5'7" running back who's never played a down of NFL football.
While it might be charitable to rank someone who's never played a down of NFL football inside the top 12 of his position, Pat, the reason why I'm ranking him much higher is because I actually want to exit drafts with Clyde Edwards-Helaire, because at running back 12, you will never exit a draft with Clyde Edwards-Helaire. And I understand maybe at the end of the season, he might wind up around that running back 9, running back 10 mark. But I also think it's in the range of outcomes where we see a top 3 season from Clyde Edwards-Helaire
position. Not even remotely feasible.
Right. And so that's where we differ, because I actually want to exit drafts with him. And that's kind of where I'm, you know, changing my rankings. It's based on who I'm drafting and who I'm exiting and leaving drafts with. And so I think the real question for me, Hayden, and I want to get to you, is how far up do we move him? Because I'm comfortable taking him ahead of Miles Sanders and Joe Mixon. The only question is if you move him ahead of Derrick Henry and Dalvin Cook. And I think because of that receiving qualities that I think he possesses, we can't know, but what I think he possesses, and how he's attached to, you know, the best passing offense in the NFL. That's why I'm comfortable taking him ahead of Derrick Henry right now.
Yeah, Derrick Henry, I'd rather have in a non-PPR format, but I would rather chase Clyde Edwards-Helaire in the PPR format. But they're very close. Like, those are the two guys I'm kind of debating between. I just don't think that the backup running backs on the Chiefs are actually going to make that big of an impact compared to Clyde Edwards-Helaire. Darrell Williams, DeAndre Washington, Darwin Thompson. I mean, these guys at best are just going to mix in a couple snaps per game. And we saw Damien Williams, who I would say is nowhere near the talent as Clyde Edwards-Helaire. He was the RB7 in usage from week 9 on through the playoffs last year. So I think that the Chiefs have shown that they can get a running back involved in this offense. This is something that Andy Reid's done for 2 decades now. I think that Clyde Edwards-Helaire, just in this offense, I think he's going to be the goal line back because he is 5'7", but he's also like 207 pounds. Like, we're not talking about, when we think about a 5'7 running back, we usually think like 5'7", 185. No, we're talking about 5'7", like 200 plus. We're talking about a really beefy dude.
I think he's gonna have the,
yeah, exactly. So I think he's going to have the goal line role despite being short. And I think that with the passing volume and then all these training camp reports, I'm talking about every well-connected national media member just keeps dropping these hints on the timeline, draft Clyde Edwards-Helaire early. We had Lewis Riddick, Peter King, another big J journalist dropping these hints out there. So I just want to be in. I was in on it before Damien Williams. I just want to continue to be hired. I'll chase the upside. I will concede that there's a little more risk, but we're trying to get first place here.
Yep.
It is an upside chase. I mean, it's totally justifiable upside chase. And I would say all the backups you mentioned, none of them individually are going to come anywhere close to making an impact. But, you know, the three, even if the three of them are playing 8 to 10 snaps a game, I mean, that adds up very quickly as a collective. And I just wouldn't be surprised if it's a kind of situation where maybe Clyde Edwards-Helaire like starts putting fantasy teams on his back in the second half of the season. But in the first half of the season, it's just more of like an RB2 flex. And you do not want to be drafting that with your first round pick. But I mean, again, I'm just already crafting my resignation, my retirement speech for when this blows up. When Clyde Edwards-Helaire and Josh Allen are on every single championship fantasy team. And because I should have said, I said earlier, no chance he finishes in the top three. I mean, he is a special talent. He was a first round running back pick of Andy Reid, who knows running back talent as well as any coach in the NFL. So I would be lying if I said I thought there was no chance that Clyde Edwards-Helaire goes totally bonkers, because it is within the realm of possibility.
One closing note. I mean, just from trying to read you, Pat, it seems like you are nervous about him as a runner, like more than anything else. And I would say what creates rushing success is offensive line blocking plus positive game scripts. Like, being good in the receiving game is more difficult than being good in the running game, right? And so, I mean, we've seen it with these other backs that the Chiefs have had. So, I mean, again, we all have our biases, especially for rookies, based on, you know, what we have watched. But I just have no questions. And now that he's landed, like Hayden mentioned, even when Damien Williams was still part of this, I was still trying to come home with Clyde Edwards-Helaire and my on my teams. And even more so now, like, if I'm in the middle of that first round, I want to exit with CEH. Because
what I was saying, I mean, that is his special skill, pass catching. But I mean, even that, I wouldn't assume he's just going to like hit the ground, right? It's just such a weird year for rookies. They've missed so many. I mean, they are normally out there a week after the draft, conditioning and, you know, getting in the flow of the playbook. And, you know, he's been with the Chiefs, you know, for under a month, basically. And it's just, it's a tough year, I think, to put like these humongous expectations on rookies.
Well, we've talked a lot this summer about that first tier of running backs, even that second tier of running backs. I wanted to talk about the backs that make up the top of our third tier. For Hayden and I, that is James Conner. I have him as the running back 13. Hayden has him as the running back 15. For Pat, that's David Johnson, who you have as the running back 15. Hayden, talk to me about why James Conner, you're most confident in him among those tier three RBs.
Well, if you're using RotoWorld's rankings, we have him right at the round 2-3 turn. He was going as a round 4 pick, then he kind of creeped into the round 3 pick. But I think that we've seen some positive buzz out of Pittsburgh camp that Big Ben is at least somewhat healthy. I'm not fully convinced that that's going to last the entire season because he is aging, and that was a serious arm injury he had last year. But I think that James Conner has bankable production whenever he's going to be healthy. And that's kind of the question, is where do you draft somebody that is not only an injury risk to himself, but also his quarterback has some injury risk. But I do think that he's going to be a low-end RB1 type whenever Big Ben and James Conner are both healthy. And I think that this defense is good. I think that they're not going to pass the ball quite as much as they once were just because they don't have Antonio Brown. So I think that James Conner, 20-plus touches a week, justifies him as an early third-round pick.
Yeah, Pat, before we get to you and David Johnson, let me just cap this James Conner conversation, because prior to the 2019 season, I mean, this team was a one-back offense. You know, in 2017 and 2018, one back saw over 70% of the team's opportunity. And just looking in this area of the draft, I mean, it's not like James Conner, like I would understand if he's the only one with questions, but we've thrown out Todd Gurley, Chris Carson, David Johnson switching teams, Melvin Gordon is switching teams, Le'Veon Bell after his season. I mean, keep going further and further down the list. And I think everyone, I mean, literally everyone on the Steelers offense is underpriced right now. And that includes James Conner. And I think as long as he stays healthy, he's going to get 70% of the workload and hopefully in positive game scripts because of quarterback play and because of that defense. But Pat, it's not like I dislike David Johnson. So I also understand why you have him as the top of this tier.
I mean, they're practically interchangeable. I've thought about flipping it with James Conner. Just kind of, I've just never loved James Conner, the player. You know, he's not the most explosive player. He has durability questions. You know, the Steelers in the past kind of publicly talked about their durability concerns with James Conner. And then, you know, once again, last year, he wasn't super durable. And like you guys said, normally this is a one-man backfield, but last year it wasn't. And a lot of that was because of injury, but I wouldn't be surprised if maybe the Steelers do kind of dial off James Conner as like a 80 to 90% player. And he's maybe more in the 60 to 70% range. We got a little Benny Snell camp hype the other day. So yeah, give Benny Snell. So I was thinking about the reasons why I have David Johnson ranked like a spot or two ahead of James Conner. And yeah, the reasons were, you know, Conner's just not that explosive and he's just not that durable. Well, how does that explain? How does that describe David Johnson these days? I mean, that can also perfectly describe David Johnson. And I think maybe I've gotten a little too focused on the fact I've just been really focused all season on the commitment the Texans have made to David Johnson, how badly they clearly wanted David Johnson. And it's been hard for me to get that out of my head just because clearly they are all in on David Johnson and are huge believers in David Johnson still. But there's not a big difference between James Conner and David Johnson. And I've been thinking about changing my rankings for a few weeks now.
2 points though. I mean, going back to what you said about James Conner never loving the talent, I agree. And like, if you put the best of David Johnson out there versus the best of James Conner, I mean, David Johnson is like a full lap ahead of him. And if you and I, Pat, can take a walk down Narrative Street, I absolutely think that Bill O'Brien is the type that said, oh, you made fun of me for acquiring David Johnson in this trade for DeAndre Hopkins. I'm going to feature him in this backfield. I'm going to make him once again look like that he's one of the best backs in the NFL. My only question is this, and maybe this is going to be the difference between Bill O'Brien and Tim Kelly as play callers. Duke Johnson is one of the best receiving backs in the NFL. And just last season, he reached a season low in his career in targets last year. And we know that David Johnson, what really makes him special other than being a explosive runner is that he at times was the best receiving back in the NFL. So I'm nervous that either that's a Deshaun Watson thing, it's a Houston Texans thing, but maybe Tim Kelly can, you know, open up those layups to running backs like other teams have been able to do with their quarterbacks and running back combinations.
I think that is the worst news really for Duke Johnson, because I mean, that is his signature skill. Whereas for David Johnson, he's one of the only backs yet who can make a reasonable claim that he's a better pass catching back than Duke Johnson. And this might just end up with Duke Johnson having an even smaller role somehow, which makes us all sad and cry when we end the podcast.
Hayden, any thoughts on David Johnson before we move on?
Yeah, just echoing what you guys said, David Johnson or Deshaun Watson targeted his running backs at the third lowest rate in the NFL. That's probably because he scrambles when he breaks the pocket instead of checking down. He also is really aggressive downfield, and the way that the Texans offense is kind of set up with the receivers, with Brandon Cooks, Kenny Stills, and then also with Will Fuller, of course, I think that they're going to be wanting to throw the ball downfield a lot. So that would be my biggest concern with David Johnson, along with, does he have enough juice left? And that's basically this entire tier is, do these guys have juice left? Leonard Fournette, Chris Carson coming off of injury, Todd Gurley coming off of a long history of knee problems, James Conner, this entire tier is, do these guys have juice left? Because we can predict volume to an extent, but can they actually hold up?
Yeah, a little nervous about the Texans defense keeping them in, you know, neutral or positive game scripts. But look, if Carlos Hyde can run for 1,000 yards, David Johnson can run for 1,000 yards. The issue is that 1,000 yards actually going to help your fantasy team? Because we know Carlos Hyde did not help your fantasy team last year. Let's shift over to quarterback. Apparently, I will be in the witness chair here because got to talk about Baker Mayfield. Like, last offseason, it seems like every single podcast included a Baker Mayfield conversation. I feel like we have not talked about him once on this show this summer. I have Baker Mayfield as the quarterback 16. Pat has him as the quarterback 23, and Hayden has him as the quarterback 21. Again, this is Baker Mayfield, who heading into last year was a top 12 player at the position based on fantasy rankings, and he absolutely did not meet that. Hayden, what are your concerns heading into what, year three now?
Well, you can make the case that no team did more for their quarterback than the Browns did for Baker Mayfield this year. A massive upgrade at the coaching position. And you have Odell Beckham coming back. He should be healthier. They upgraded their offensive tackles. So I think that just overall, this is setting up for a much better year for Baker Mayfield. My biggest concern is while I think that he's going to be way more efficient as a passer, I just am not convinced that the pass attempts are going to be there. Under Stefanski last year, the Vikings were 30th in pass attempts. I can see Baker Mayfield finishing about like 24th, 25th overall. I think this Browns defense is a little bit better than what we give him credit for. So I wouldn't be surprised if this is just a kind of a slow paced run heavy offense where Baker Mayfield has some big weeks, but he just ends up being a low end QB2.
First off, don't Google Patrick Daugherty, Baker Mayfield, 2019. Because it might not match up with what I've said and written this year. And Hayden, you also left out in terms of Baker Mayfield enhancements, the Browns making Austin Hooper the highest paid overall player in the league.
That's right.
Not just the tight end. Don't fact check that one either. But with Baker Mayfield, what a boy. First off, Kevin Stefanski, we think he's a huge coaching upgrade. I still don't know who Kevin Stefanski is. I don't know how much of last year was Kevin Stefanski and how much of it was like shadow man Gary Kubiak kind of behind the scenes pulling the strings of that offense. He was offensive advisor, and the offenses happen to have a very, very heavy Gary Kubiak flavor. So I don't know if we know for sure what kind of offense Kevin Stefanski is going to run. We were assuming it'll be very play action heavy, which Kirk Cousins excelled at, which the Vikings excelled at, and which Baker Mayfield was absolutely atrocious at last year. His QB rating on play action is under 70, which seems almost impossible. And which that just gets to like my biggest question with Baker Mayfield is, you know, last year he was just a frenetic player. I mean, a player who, I'm getting into like projecting now, but like a player who seemed to have zero confidence and was just frenetic on a weekly basis. And someone who bottomed out to a level I didn't think was possible after what I thought was a very strong rookie year. And it's just very hard to know what to expect from Baker Mayfield. But even a good Baker Mayfield outcome this year is basically like a 2019 Kirk Cousins outcome. And Kirk Cousins, despite being a pretty great real life player last year, was pretty pretty consistently like what, QB 17 to 24 range. And unfortunately, there doesn't seem to be much ceiling with Baker Mayfield this year. And there's just so much ceiling at this position in general. So why would you take someone where you're not sure of the ceiling?
Yeah, I mean, a lot of that is fair. Yeah, Kirk Cousins ended as the quarterback 18 in fantasy points per game last year. And I absolutely agree with Baker Mayfield. Like so much of the time, the offensive line got, you know, criticized. And I would say that even when they blocked, Baker Mayfield was the one letting his team down. But I'll say this. I mean, what Kevin Stefanski is, Pat, is he understands the importance of play action. It's in his usage, and it's in how he talks to the media and in his press conferences. And they ran the second most two tight end sets last year. Well, they've set up for that this year with Austin Hooper and David Njoku. And, you know, Kirk was the quarterback 18 in fantasy points per game last year, throwing to really just Stephon Diggs. And half the time it was Adam Thielen. What Kirk has been is one of, you know, a top seven deep ball passer in the NFL in recent years, which is kind of shocking to think about. Well, what if I said that this year off of play action, if Baker, you know, has found his footwork again and his comfort inside of structure, you're throwing to Odell Beckham, who he misfired on a lot of deep shots last year, and Jarvis Landry in your two tight end sets, throwing to, again, Austin Hooper and David Njoku, and Kareem Hunt and Nick Chubb. out of the backfield. Look, I'm not exiting. I don't want to sound like this. I'm not exiting a lot of drafts with Baker Mayfield because, again, he's in my quarterback 16. I'm exiting more drafts with Cam Newton and Ben Roethlisberger, who I rank higher. But I do think, like, from a talent perspective, I don't think it's unreasonable to think that Baker Mayfield and Kirk Cousins are in that same area. And what Kevin Stefanski did with Kirk Cousins, I think he can do with Baker Mayfield this year.
For all the things we don't know about Kevin Stefanski, there's one thing we do know is he's not Freddie Kitchens. Like, I think just by default, he's going to be an improvement to some extent. I've only been drafting Baker Mayfield if I've already drafted Odell in like the third round or the fourth round, or Jarvis Landry in the sixth or seventh round. I think he's fine as your QB2 if you're trying to go for a stack. I think the Brown stack is reasonable. I would not say if you're in a one quarterback league that Baker Mayfield is your guy that you should be drafting if you're a late round quarterback guy. But I think that he will have some weeks where John Daigle's talking about him in the waiver wire column. He's in a good matchup. The team's playing pretty well, and now he's a low end quarterback one for a few weeks of the year.
I mean, I've seen Odell go as like the wide receiver 16 in some drafts, which is just shocking considering I think he's still maybe a top 3 to 5 talent at the position in the NFL. So we'll see if the Browns, I guess it's not a bounce back because what are they going to bounce back from? I mean, they've never been up in that top tier, but just, you know, improved play. Hopefully we can see from the Browns.
They're bouncing back from almost beating the Ravens in week 17 right. of the 2018 season. That's kind of the current high water mark for the Cleveland Browns.
Reese's peanut butter cups are the greatest, but let me play devil's advocate here. Let's see. So no, that's a good thing. That's definitely not a problem. Reese's, you did it. You stumped this charming devil.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to keepitfunohio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
Life is a highway, and on it there will be many chicken sandwiches. But there's only one McCrispy. So go ahead and hit the turn signal if you know about this juicy gem of a detour.
Let's go over to wide receiver. Kenny Golladay is a name that I think everyone likes in the fantasy football industry, especially in those, what, first 7 or 8 games he had with Matthew Stafford last year. Pat is unreasonably high on Kenny Golladay as wide receiver 6, loves him more than anyone in the industry. I know Hayden and I are basically in unison. I have him as the wide receiver 14. Hayden has him as the wide receiver 13. Pat, tell us why.
Well, there's a lot of people that agree with me. His ADP is in that range, like the wide receiver 6 to 8 range. And first off, the fantasy industry is like really psyching itself out this year on like players it has always loved, like Aaron Jones and Kenny Golladay. And not just players they've always loved, but players they've always loved who then like lived up to the hype last year. So I kind of don't understand like the grasping of straws with Kenny Golladay and Aaron Jones. But Kenny Golladay, part of it is just the player – Kenny Golladay to me is a certainty. He's an explosive, extreme downfield talent and an offense that we think wants to be downfield focused in the passing game still. And I just feel like I have a very good handle on how the Lions are going to use Kenny Golladay. And we've made a habit too of overstating like Marvin Jones. Marvin Jones is an elite peripheral player, but that is still what he is, a peripheral player too, who has missed time with injury each of the past 2 seasons and is now on the wrong side of 30. But I don't really have any questions about Kenny Golladay, whereas going right behind him is Chris Godwin, or going right in front of him is Chris Godwin. You know, we don't know Chris Godwin and Mike Evans, Golladay is sandwiched between Godwin and Evans in ADP right now. And, you know, we spend all summer debating how are the Bucks, you know, really going to use these guys. And then, you know, we have Amari Cooper with this elite 3 receiver set and the weird finish last year. You have Adam Thielen, who has been under 1,000 yards over the past 18 games. And Allen Robinson, DJ Moore, Odell Beckham. And it's just all guys who kind of have question marks. And Kenny Golladay, he's an elite player that I don't have any questions about. So I just feel comfortable taking him there.
From an analytics perspective, Kenny Golladay's his usage was more of like a high-end wide receiver too. And of course, we should expect Kenny Golladay to kind of outproduce what an average player would be doing. But he did score 4.8 more touchdowns than he should have based off of his usage. And now you throw in TJ Hawkinson, who's a breakout candidate, DeAndre Swift, There's still some injury risk with Matthew Stafford. So while I love Kenny Golladay, and I think that he will be kind of teetering on this wide receiver 1-2 borderline, I've kind of been shying away with him just a little bit, where I'm only drafting him if he's falling a little bit. I can see why. He's a very bankable player. Like, I don't think that the floor is just going to fall out from underneath him, but it would not surprise me if he was more of a high-end wide receiver 2 rather than a low-end wide receiver 1. But we're nitpicking with all these players. Kind of just get your guys.
Yeah, Pat, I wasn't fair to you, to be honest. I just want you to know that as a host, I should say that, because you're right. I mean, consensus and where he's going in drafts, it's that wide receiver 6 or it's that wide receiver 7. You're just unreasonably high compared to Hayden and I. And I think part of it for me is last year, you know, I think running back had been healthier than it had ever been before. Wide receiver, though, a lot of people were misused. A lot of people were associated to bad quarterback play, and a lot of those players were injured for parts of the season. I mean, that's, again, what has made us basically forget about and drop receivers like Juju Smith-Schuster and Odell Beckham out of the top 10 of this position, whereas prior to last year, you know, both were easy top 10 wide receivers. So
I got to interrupt you there, though, because we had the same thing happen to Kenny Golladay. He said 7 touchdowns in 8 games with Matthew Stafford, and then had a whole half of the season playing with absolute clowns at quarterback. And his expected touchdowns, the divide would have been even greater if there had been 8 more games of Matthew Stafford, because he probably would have gotten up to 11 or 12 touchdowns. And he had a very great – he had borderline – even in PPR, he was almost a wide receiver 1 by average points in a year where he played 8 games without Matthew Stafford. And he's just a talent we've always loved, who is performing as the talent we thought he was. And I think we're kind of overthinking it.
Well, and I don't want it to sound like Hayden, I don't like him. I mean, if he's –
You didn't
there,
like him last year either, Josh, if I must remember.
Yeah, he was one of my fades last year, to be perfect, because I just knew David Blau was going to come in, and I didn't think David Blau was going to play well. You know, this goes back to our conversation like we have with Clyde Edwards-Helaire, Pat. Like, I'm sure in a lot of drafts you're exiting with Kenny Golladay. It just doesn't seem like Hayden and I will, based on where we have him ranked. But it's difficult – and we'll continue on with this conversation – it's difficult to dislike any of those wide receivers. It just kind of depends on who you're exiting with, as that's how you're ranking them in the end.
And that's the thing. Sorry to get in the final thought here, but I'm not even surprised that I have him as the wide receiver 6. It doesn't seem crazy to me that you have him as the wide receiver 14, because it's such a deep tier of players this year. This wide receiver, it goes 20 to 22 genuinely deep. Like, it's just an elite position this year.
Let's talk about that tier again, and I'm jumping down a little bit here, but Calvin Ridley is a name that you two are split on. Hayden, you have him as the wide receiver 11. Pat, you have him as the wide receiver 25. Hayden, I know there's a lot to love. I think his ADP is around that wide receiver 15 mark. So at wide receiver 11, you're exiting a lot of drafts with him.
Yeah, definitely. This is just an opportunity thing. I'm not sure if Calvin Ridley is like a true number one receiver, but he doesn't have to be. He's alongside Julio Jones. The Falcons have 258 available targets. That's the most in the NFL. And then last year, when Mohamed Sanu was traded, Calvin Ridley ended up being the wide receiver 7 per game for the second half of the season. The Falcons have the toughest schedule in the league. So I think that the Falcons are pretty much locked into either throwing the most passes in the league or being in the top 3 or top 4. And I just think that the target share is just going to be so funneled to Julio Jones and Calvin Ridley. Maybe a little bit towards Hayden Hurst as well. But, I mean, Russell Gage is the number 3 receiver, and he was a 6th-rounder with a career yards per attempt at 6.1. So I just think that Calvin Ridley, his floor is so high, and he's an injury away from Julio Jones from being like a top 6 guy. So I think he's going to be a high-end wide receiver 2, maybe even a low-end wide receiver 1 this year.
First of all, I don't enjoy hearing that I have Calvin Ridley ranked as the wide receiver 25. Like, even to me, like, that sounds like a stunt, like, when I hear that. And maybe there is, like, some subconscious level of, like, overfading him. But first off, what kind of boils down to is the players going directly behind him in ADP: A.J. Brown, Robert Woods, Cortland Sutton, D.K. Metcalf, D.J. Chark, Terry McLaurin, even Keenan Allen. Those are all guys I probably just feel more comfortable with than Calvin Ridley. And so – the opportunity is great. The opportunity is undeniable, but it just can't be opportunity alone. And through 2 years, I just haven't seen Calvin Ridley be that elite athlete, kind of like in a way like Chris Godwin was. So everyone wants Calvin Ridley to be this year's Chris Godwin. Like, Chris Godwin was just kind of undeniable. And I just haven't seen that kind of like athletic peak from Calvin Ridley, who is not a yak threat. Matt Kelly, Fantasy Mansion, has called him a catch and fall guy, which is, you know, overstating the issue, but he's not a yak guy. He's not an established deep threat. And I just don't, where does this upside come from with Calvin Ridley? And the opportunity is great. The floor is so high, as Hayden said. But I just don't know if the ceiling is ultimately there. I don't know if he's a special enough player for that ceiling. And when I just see all this upside this year and like kind of like this wide receiver, like I said, like 7 to 22 range, just like overflowing with upside, it's just almost every other player in that range, I would rather bet on their upside than Calvin Ridley.
I think the Falcons offense is so known that it's easy to fall back on that in a season that has some unknown elements to it as well. So that's why I have Calvin Ridley much closer where Hayden has him as wide receiver 13. But Hayden and I drastically differ on another player in that close to that same tier. I have him in that tier. I know Hayden has him in probably the one after, and that's Stephon Diggs. My wide receiver 22, Hayden's wide receiver 33. Hayden, I'll give you the pitch on Stephon Diggs right now and see if I can change your mind. All right. Because Stephon Diggs is being treated like a bad decision that the Bills made, you know, because last year, John Brown finished as the wide receiver 21 and Stephon Diggs, if I can find him real quick, is going as the wide receiver 28. So basically everyone out there is just saying, nah, Stephon Diggs isn't going to do what John Brown did last year. Well, John Brown, you know, finally stayed healthy and finally had a great connection with a quarterback in Josh Allen. And we know how poor Josh Allen was throwing vertically. He was 29th among 36 qualified quarterbacks in deep ball passer rating last year. Well, I think the Bills took a step back and said, okay, what can we do to help fix the issues of our quarterback's talents? We bring in the best deep ball receiver in the NFL, which is what Stephon Diggs was last year, scored more 20-plus yard touchdowns in terms of air yards than any other wide receiver out there. So, I mean, over 600 of his 1,100 yards came from 20-plus yard throws. So even if Josh Allen can slightly improve in that area, Stephon Diggs is going to be the one to benefit. And I just don't see how he can finish below, definitely significantly below where John Brown did last year, yet his ADP is indicative that everyone out there thinks he's going to.
Well, for those reasons that you just laid out, I view those as negatives. So particularly with the deep ball threat, I believe Stephon Diggs is truly one of the greatest deep ball threats in the NFL, but these are also the most volatile types of targets in the league. If you look at air yards between like 25 and 50 yards downfield, those are the most volatile types of targets, and Stephon Diggs was elite at those last year. So even if he was on the Vikings still, I would have projected him for just fewer deep yards just because he's basically playing at an unsustainable place. And then that's not even including the drop off that you're getting from Kirk Cousins, a truly accurate quarterback. Over the last few years, he's 9th out of 38 in completion percentage over expected. Josh Allen's 35th out of 38. So this is a notable drop off. And then going back to the John Brown thing, I think we keep viewing the John Brown as, I think you said he was the wide receiver 21 or somewhere around that range. He's not leaving. John Brown's still there. Cole Beasley's still there. The Bills have the fewest amount of available targets. They only have 35 available targets from last year going into this year. So I think that the target competition is a little more – I think it's kind of being undersold a little bit, where I think John Brown's still going to be involved. Cole Beasley's still going to be involved. I think Stephon Diggs is definitely a tier or two above both of those receivers. But I just don't think that the volume – and then I'm kind of worried about the Josh Allen connection. I view those – kind of as bigger threats as what most people would believe.
Yeah, it's unfortunate because Stephon Diggs is one of my favorite players in the NFL, especially after he rewrote the record book in my Madden dynasty. I mean, we're talking truly rewrote, insane numbers you wouldn't even believe. But you know, I mean, he's one of the most explosive players in the NFL. Like you guys both said, one of the best deep threats in the NFL. But he's not just a deep threat. I mean, he could be a short immediate threat too. Kirk Cousins, Hayden outlined Kirk Cousins' accuracy. Kirk Cousins isn't just accurate, he's also accurate deep. And then you guys both too talk about Josh Allen, despite his signature attribute being his arm strength, has been horrible deep. And I just feel like Steph Diggs might have some buyer's remorse on like forcing the trade. And as Hayden said too, like John Brown hasn't gone away. I mean, Steph Diggs is such a special player. I mean, there's a universe where he finishes like as a wide receiver one this year. Like it just, him and Josh Allen just find the chemistry, find the connection. And like the Bills plans fall into place. But I do lean more to the Hayden side of the argument, where it's just just a special player in a very uncertain, not ideal situation.
Yeah, I mean, it's not like I'm sitting here and thinking that Josh Allen's issues are just going to be cured. You know, I don't think
your ranking is not egregious at all, right, either. Like, you haven't ranked as a low end wide receiver too. That's like a great Steph Diggs hedge.
Yeah. I mean, I just think that the Bills from a franchise perspective and Brian Daboll as a play caller perspective very much know the positives and negatives, the strengths and weaknesses of Josh Allen's game. And while last year they took a step in the right direction with the Cole Beasley and the John Brown, I think they took a step even further in the right direction of building this roster around Josh Allen in terms of Zach Moss, who can catch passes out of the backfield, and Stephon Diggs, who, Pat, I think it's a great point that you make, because I did focus on his vertical ability. But, this isn't Will Fuller. This isn't Brandon Cooks, like, you know, true vertical pass catchers. Like, Stephon Diggs has also, like, had the best releases in the NFL and is one of the best route runners in the NFL. So he can still operate where Josh Allen maybe is more accurate than in other areas. But, yeah.
Hey, Stephon Diggs, he's like an Antonio Brown-type talent, yeah, basically.
Yes, and I think
this is one of those where, like, he's just so talented. This makes me very nervous to fade a player of this caliber. But sometimes you just have to pull the trigger. And I think this year, this wide receiver three range is, like, pretty strong too. Like, we're, like, mentioning some of these guys like Will Fuller. I think that those guys actually have more upside, just because I think the passing offenses that they're in are more electric than what the Bills offense could be. Keep in mind, this is a very, very strong defense. They have two capable running backs. Josh Allen likes to run the ball too. Maybe the passing volume is just not going to be there for Diggs to return, like, top 20 fantasy production.
We are exiting one team where we talked about three wide receivers to another team where we talk about three wide receivers in the Dallas Cowboys. You know, we spent a lot of time on Amari Cooper, and Amari Cooper is going as the wide receiver 11. Michael Gallup, if you put up their stats, they are basically identical to Amari Cooper put up last year, yet he's going about 20 spots later at the wide receiver position as wide receiver 30. But the name I want to talk about is CeeDee Lamb, the new entrant into that group, because Hayden Winks, wide receiver 42 for CeeDee Lamb, who is going as the wide receiver 40, which I'm a bit stunned by. And because of that, Pat, you and I are just never exiting drafts with him, because I have him as the wide receiver 52, and you have him all the way down as the wide receiver 59. Hayden, give us the positives here with CeeDee. Obviously, there's a lot, because he's a very talented player, first-round pick, but why you're in on him this year?
Well, if you watched any Oklahoma games last year, you can tell that he was the best player on the field. He averaged 15.1 yards per target, not yards per catch, yards per target last year. That's why he was drafted in the first round. He's a better athlete than what some people give him credit for. He's just not, like, super explosive, like, in straight line speed, but his body control is just so amazing. And he goes into an offense that I think is going to be either second or third in scoring this year and in yardage in general. And I think people think that, okay, there's Michael Gallup, there's Amari Cooper, there's Ezekiel Elliott. Where are the targets going to go? They have the second most available targets from last year because Randall Cobb and Jason Witten leave. They're going to be putting CeeDee Lamb in the slot a lot. Him and Amari Cooper kind of going to be rotating from the slot and to, like, a flanker position. So I think that he's going to have easiest releases. I think that he's just such a good playmaker. I think that he's going to be a top, like, 40 type of talent if both of those guys stay healthy. And if Amari Cooper or Michael Gallup leave with some random injury that we can't predict yet, he's going to be screaming up rankings. So I kind of want to be justifying that into my rankings before that happens. So I think that the floor is just a little bit higher than what people give him credit for, just because he's such a good player.
I mean, it's a pretty compelling case from Hayden, and I've heard that Cowboys available target stat several times this summer, and it's never
not. I hate saying it.
Well, it's never not mind blowing, though. I mean, it's a great stat to share. But it does. It just boils down to me, like, repeating a bunch of things I already said, but, like, a rookie in the COVID year behind two bona fide target hogs and Amari Cooper and Michael Gallup. And then, of course, Ezekiel Elliott, who is going to remain a huge focus for the offense. And, you know, even Blake Jarwin, an ascendant tight end. It's just, I just don't think there's going to be enough targets there for him to be anything more than, like, the number four or five. Even in a good offense, you need to be more than the number four or five, like, offensive option to be a fantasy guy. And I just don't think, I just, I just don't see the path to basically CeeDee Lamb being a starter for your fantasy team and on almost any given week, absent injury. But there's a lot of guys who will become fantasy starters if there are injuries in front of them. So I just, unfortunately, is a special player, someone I absolutely loved in the draft, someone who I guess I should have been happy for landed in such a great offense, but I was very sad from a fantasy perspective when he landed in this crowded offense. And CeeDee Lamb, someone I'm very bullish on his career, but I just have a hard time seeing the path to the redraft value.
It's so tough because you can easily say that the Cowboys are going to be the second best passing offense in the NFL behind Patrick Mahomes. And why wouldn't we want pieces of that, right? And again, Amari is the most difficult piece to get. And I think Michael Gallup, again, at wide receiver 30 is pretty easy to invest in. CeeDee Lamb is even easier to invest in. And, you know, at the very least, if he gets the 83 targets that Randall Cobb got last season, then yeah, he probably is going to be fantasy relevant. Hey, I want to close with this. From a big picture perspective, because now I'm questioning it, right? Am I dumb to be way more into Henry Ruggs and Jalen Reagor this year, who I have as wide receiver 36 and 35 respectively, and then I'm so far down here on CeeDee Lamb? Is that just me thinking, even though both are probably going to be on worse passing offenses, I think there's a clear path to opportunity for both Ruggs and Reagor. Is what infiltrating my brain right now?
No, I think that's totally fair. I think that Henry Ruggs and Jalen Reagor have a higher chance of being like a more bankable flex play. And I think that CeeDee Lamb's going to be one of these players that's going to have huge spike weeks, but we don't really know when it's coming. But I just keep going back to, I just picture myself in like week five and I'm like, who am I going to start? And there's going to be one of the most explosive receivers and attached to one of the best offenses in the league. That's the type of person where you're debating between him or somebody else. You're like, okay, at least give me a shot at a 20-point week. And I think that CeeDee Lamb's going to be providing some of those. Maybe not every single week, but there's going to be enough spiked weeks to justify where he's being drafted at.
Pat, any closing thoughts here?
No, actually. We've been to – I had a lot of closing thoughts throughout the pod and getting in several times. The last word, Pat. But no, I don't.
Let me just reiterate what Michael Gallup did compared to Amari Cooper last year, because it's stunning. I mean, Amari Cooper, 119 targets, 79 receptions, almost 1,200 yards and 8 touchdowns. Okay. Michael Gallup, 113 targets, 66 receptions, 1,100 yards and 6 touchdowns. That doesn't necessarily read to me as a 20-gap difference, the wide receiver position. But again, that is what is happening this
Wasn't
year.
Wasn't Gallup banged up several times too? Maybe yeah. That was 2018.
He's just an awesome player. He's just an awesome football player. And the Cowboys are just going to be so much fun to watch. All right. That
Mike McCarthy, challenge accepted to that statement. Let's not take it. Let's just not assume that. Let's hope that.
Well, if they get rid of Kellen Moore, I'd be with you. But I think the fact that they kept Kellen Moore makes me feel a lot better about it.
I know Kellen Moore is supposedly calling the plays, but I mean, Mike McCarthy, let's just hope he doesn't challenge accepted us on that one. That's all I'm saying.
By the way, Pat, someone out there said you look like a young Andy Reid with that mustache, and that's the only thing I can see now.
I just keep hearing your Stranger Things cop over and over and over again. And I do see that one. I grant that one. And the Andy Reid one, too, I grant, too. R-I-E-D, Andy Reid, from the old clip. That's just a terrible inside joke.
Is this here to stay, Pat?
Well, okay. My third child is due in 9 to 10 days. And I think there's still a desire amongst the family that I look normal for the birth of our child. So it is this might be the final podcast appearance for the mustache for now.
It's a hit.
It is a hit. I must admit, I spent the whole morning going viral after you tweeted the picture. So
you're welcome. That's what I do for my peers.
Yeah, we're trying to decide. We might have a family meeting here soon. We haven't picked the baby name yet, but the meeting might devolve into what to do with the mustache.
Yep. Hayden Josh Daugherty sounds to me wonderful. Wonderful. All right. That is going to do it for us. Again, I want to reiterate that we have the best deal in fantasy football. Go over to rotoworld.com/edge. You can find all of these rankings, our outliers. Hayden actually made columns where you can check out each staff member's rankings as well. There's cheat sheets. There's mock drafts. There's projections specifically just for your league that you can enter. Again, rotoworld.com/edge and enter FBPod10 for $10 off. Hayden, it's what? It's the price of guacamole, $4 a month.
Yep, and I need that guacamole, so go buy it.
All right. So for Patrick Daugherty, for Josh Norris, and Hayden Winks, up the villa. Talk to y'all soon.
Reese's peanut butter cups are the greatest, but let me play devil's advocate here. Let's see. So, no, that's a good thing.
That's definitely not a problem. Reese's, you did it. You stumped this charming devil.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to keepitfunohio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.